This is 91.3 KUAF, your source for NPR news and NPR programming for more than 32 years. And this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, March 17th, 2017. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm Kyle Kellums. In about 9 minutes on Ozarks, it will take more than luck to win a design competition on the University of Arkansas campus, but the gold at the end of the rainbow is $10,000 in seed money for a startup. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda will have that story. And later, Jake Herzog plays for us inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. He'll be solo today, but later this month, he's delivering a free concert along with Drew Packard and Chris Teal in the Honors College Lounge on the U of A campus. First, this Friday, Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics will help us review the week's news. I should point out that according to my incredibly quick research, that Tilley is a name that developed after the Norman Conquest, first used in Southwest England, so not Irish. But you know what, Michael? We welcome you to the show anyway. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Well, I've been drinking all that green beer this morning for nothing, man, apparently. Jeez.
In full disclosure, Kellums is also sort of there, but many Kellums moved to Ireland. So that's how I can claim some Irish heritage.
Well, there was a John Tilley who was the 16th signer of the Mayflower Compact, and then we kind of lose the family line from there. The next group we know starts in North Carolina somewhere, and not especially proud of the North Carolina connection, but, you know, it is what it is.
All right. Speaking about what it is, what it might be, the Donald Trump administration budget, we're getting leaks and sneak previews, and boy, are there some things that are going to be cut, right?
Yeah, some interesting things. I mean, close to home things. Let me touch just on a couple. There's a program called Essential Air Service through the Department of Transportation. That's fun for the past 40-something years. That's allowed some of these smaller communities who are large, but they're not large enough for like a regional airport, but they still have enough, they're large enough to have demand for people that need to have airline connection to these hubs. Well, in Arkansas, Jonesboro, Harrison, Hot Springs, El Dorado, Camden, they are called EAS, Essential Air Service Cities, and the airlines that fly in and out of there get a subsidy, about $200 per passenger. Well, that's going away. It's proposed to go away, I should say. We'll see where the budget goes. But, you know, that's huge. We don't yet have the story posted, Kyle. We'll have it posted a little later today. But, you know, these services will go away. I mean, the only reason they're profitable for these companies is with this subsidy. So we're going to have five Arkansas cities that lose connection. That's in terms of economic development. I mean, if I'm the governor of Arkansas, that is not good for economic development. The other aspect is, and this is the one that puzzles me somewhat, Kyle, because President Trump has talked quite a bit about restoring manufacturing, reshoring, bringing manufacturing back, yet his budget wipes out this manufacturing extension partnership, which has been ongoing for several decades. And it, again, it's one of those programs. And look, I'm not the biggest fan of government programs. I get it that some of them need to go away, but here's yet, you know, the Essential Air Service is a critical real world service. And so is this manufacturing extension partnership. It helps manufacturers get startup. It helps existing manufacturers convert to new technologies. It provides information, consulting services. And if there's ever a time where the U.S. and the Arkansas manufacturing sector needed support, it's now, but that's being yanked out. So, and the state of Arkansas receives around $1 million a year to support this program. Now, that may not mean much, but for these small manufacturers, these 5 and 10 employees, 20, 25 employees who get access to a consultant who can come in for 30 days or whatever and look at their operations and find efficiencies, they couldn't afford that otherwise. So that's going away also.
Well, you know, you have this situation where we have heard some lawmakers, especially members of the Republican Party, say, hey, look, what's about to happen is what we were told by voters wanted to happen. They wanted deep cuts. They wanted to attack the deficit. It'll be interesting now to see if some voters knew what they wanted or if they're okay with what cuts might come.
Well, I think Look, I'm one of those folks also that say we've got to attack the deficit. We've got to fix entitlement spending. But I would be willing to bet that when a lot of folks said we need to fix spending, they weren't talking about cutting essential services like this. They weren't talking about cutting Meals on Wheels programs. And we're already seeing the information come out, and you knew it was going to happen, where, you know, they're already comparing how much money's been spent to keep Trump Tower secure. You know, would already pay for anywhere from 600 to 700,000 meals through the Meals on Wheels program. So we're going to see a lot of that. So I think the tightrope, and I am sympathetic with these Republican legislators, or empathetic, maybe I should say. But I think the tightrope that they have to walk is, you know, are we cutting essential services? Are we cutting services that appeal to that hardcore, you know, the Steve Bannon base of the party? Or are we being smart about it? You know, it's hard to swallow some of these when you're boosting the defense budget, you know, by $56 billion at the same time and removing the sequestration shackles and letting that grow. So this is going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I've already heard from some Democratic consultants who say this kind of thing could help them in the 2018 midterms and congressional elections.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. The Arkansas legislature is still in session. We don't have nearly enough time to talk about everything that happened this week, but let's get some quick updates on school choice. That had a problem yesterday. Guns on college campuses has been expanded to not just campuses, and medical marijuana still is in limbo.
Yep. Well, and definitely the Education Choice Act, which is kind of a convoluted program that essentially creates kind of a like a savings account, almost like a health savings account, but for education. That really flamed out. The vote was worse than I thought it'd be. It was 37-4 and 47 against in the House. And this is called the Walmart bill, although as we discussed before we went on the air, it's a little unfair to Walmart. But it is an example of what the Walton family has been trying to do with education. But obviously you had a lot of institutional interest came out against it. Guns on campus, as you noted, it is expanding. You know, anyone with an extra 8 hours of training, you know, someone can carry a concealed weapon on campus, not just for faculty, not just for staff. And it even includes other public buildings, which includes the Capitol grounds, which is interesting. I would think the state troopers assigned to keep that place safe and the Capitol police are not happy about this. But the governor said he's going to sign it. This has been an interesting bill. I did not think that people would pull the trigger, but I didn't think this would get to this level. I just figured that maybe cooler heads would prevail and we wouldn't, that we, it would be a much more narrow bill, I guess is what I'm trying to say, that only certain people could carry weapons on campuses and that it wouldn't be expanded to other public buildings. And then of course, medical marijuana, they're again trying to water it down. Robin Lundstrom, Representative Lundstrom of Elm Springs, pushed a bill through a committee that would ban the sale of edible marijuana products. Now it would allow caregivers to prepare those products, which raises a lot of questions, but so they're still trying to water this bill down. Now, the issue is, Kyle, is that any of these changes like this to the medical marijuana bill have to get a 2/3 vote in the House because it is attached to an amendment approved by voters. So we'll see if it gets that 2/3. I've talked to some folks, Roby Brock and I've talked, we're not sure that they're going to get that 2/3 vote because you have a lot of people, unfortunately, in the legislature, still don't think we should have a medical marijuana, but they do understand, and they are getting feedback from their constituents that, look, we voted on this. Don't be tinkering with it.
Well, yeah, and as you mentioned, it's 2/3 in both chambers that it would have to tweaking. So
that's a pretty stiff hurdle.
It is.
It's even stiffer in the Senate. So we'll. I would be very surprised if this got through. Of course, like I just said, I was very surprised the gun bill was approved in the form that it was approved.
Finally, quickly, we don't have, as at the time you and I are talking, we don't have official word from Walmart that they have purchased ModCloth, but there are entities reporting it has happened. You said the last time you and I talked, watch for Walmart to pick up another one of these online retailers.
Walmart has said and made it very clear that they're going to be doing this throughout the year. ModCloth is, it's definitely that. I mean, if you were looking for a millennial style online company, this is it. I mean, it's they essentially started from a couple who wanted to sell clothes online that you find in thrift stores. And so that's kind of that vintage hip thing is what you get. The issue with ModCloth is it's really been, it has depended on venture capital, has not made money. But while Walmart's not really buying the revenue side, they're buying the talent, they're buying the market, they're buying that hip culture. And this, again, this is just like Moose Jaw, Shoe Buy, and Jet. It's just a different demographic they're buying into, plus the talent that goes with it.
All right. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about these stories, even the ones he's talking about that haven't been posted yet, at talkbusiness.net. He is not really connected to the North Carolina Tilleys. Michael, have a great weekend.
All right. Thanks.
Teenage girls of America have questions about love, and there is a place where they turn to grown-ups for advice. Just what happens when you ask a grown-up this week. Sunday mornings, 10 o'clock on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. A design competition is underway at the University of Arkansas. The university's McMillan Innovation Studio is awarding the winning team $10,000 as seed money to start their own company. Sponsorship into the Innovation Studio and coaching and mentorship from Starship Junkie. On yesterday's edition of Ozarks, we learned about a delivery robot being tested at the studio. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda recently visited the U of A campus to learn about some of the center's other projects, and she brings us this report.
Businesses of all sizes can run into problems that need innovative solutions. Through the McMillan Innovation Studio, startups and well-established companies alike are seeking those solutions from University of Arkansas students. The studio, which is part of the Sam M. Walton College of Business, is located in a former convenience store in the Harmon Avenue parking garage. It's believed to be the first interactive, open-to-the-public university retail lab created to test technologies expected to change the future of retail. The lab opened in 2016, and Clint Johnson took over as director last July.
Our mission is to help create the next generation of students who will create the next generation of retail through innovation.
The studio's namesake, Doug McMillan, is president and CEO of Walmart and a U of A alumnus. A $1 million gift from him and his wife was used to create the center. Director Clint Johnson says the studio has two parts. The first is what he calls the accelerator side, which involves finding companies from around the world that are solving unique problems in retail.
And bring them into the studio, help them identify some specific use cases that, if solved, will create some real growth for that company. And at the same time, will provide great learnings for our students.
The second part of the center is the incubator side.
With that, what we want to do is help find students, help students around the university create innovation themselves. So this is innovation brought from outside, but we want to kind of ignite the passion.
One of the benefits of working with students, Johnson says, is they can offer a new perspective to companies.
They haven't been in the real world enough yet, and so nobody's told them the thousand ways that something won't work, and so they're new and fresh, and they're just full of great ideas.
The partnership is beneficial to students as well. Nearly 20 students have been hired to work on various projects, including Matt Shepard, a senior studying mechanical engineering. Shepard says he's gained a lot of experience working on a delivery robot program with Starship Technologies.
It's really been a really cool experience to sort of be part of this company that's just getting started, really. I think it's something that a lot of my classmates don't get to do, I guess. It's also weird because, like, I never imagined that I'd be doing this. Like, up until a couple years ago, this wasn't even a thing. When I started school, I didn't think I'd be working with robots.
This pilot program is just one of a handful of projects being worked on at the center. Standing behind a checkout counter in the Innovation Studio, Director Clint Johnson demonstrates a project they're working on with Digimarc. Johnson explains that by using the company's digital watermarking technology, barcodes could be hidden all over a product so you can scan anywhere on the box. The barcodes would be virtually invisible to the human eye, but could be read by the scanner.
So regardless of where you scan, anywhere, so there's a lot of uses. So you can cover up the barcode and still scan. So a lot of potential uses. There's usage around checking efficiency. There are tremendous supply chain efficiencies that can be gained. So a lot of the supply chain is set up to be able to read a barcode on a box. So what if you no longer have to do that? What if you just have to read somewhere on the box?
A project with Five Elements Robotics is centered on an autonomous robotic shopping cart. Johnson says the idea is it would blend the best of dot-com efficiency inside a brick-and-mortar environment.
You would come in with your list already on your iPhone. You'd come in and either tap or scan, and it would download the list into the brain. The robot itself would already have a map of the store inside it with all the items. It would overlay your list with the map of the store, plot you an efficient route so that you know where to go, and select shop, and it would take off, and you follow along behind it.
The goal, Johnson says, is for students to have a leg up in the marketplace when they leave.
Be more sought after. Get a higher starting salary and grow through the organization faster because they're used to delivery and they're used to working inside a corporate environment. We would also like to see the companies that we work with grow at an accelerated rate beyond what they would otherwise. And we would love to have companies started by students come through Macmillan and become projects for future students.
More information is available at walton.uark.edu/innovation-studio. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Still ahead on our show, guitarist Jake Herzog has lived and performed all over the world, but he lives here now and is a member of the University of Arkansas faculty. Later this month, Jake will perform with Chris Teal drums and Drew Packard bass in the Honors College Lounge on the University of Arkansas campus, a free concert. Later on our show, he's solo and helping us understand the connections between music and physics.
And down to its very nature, you know, music is nothing but vibrations, and there's a very quantifiable, measurable science of vibrations and why we like the sound of this. And for several centuries, the sound of that was unpleasant to people.
Jake Herzog, his guitar, and more from the Furman Garner Performance Studio ahead on today's Ozarks at Large.
Rita Kwan is from Mississippi. People are still surprised to meet her and hear her southern accent from a person who's Chinese.
Then they ask you, what are you doing there? Because I guess they just have this idea that it is black and white.
The Diversity of Mississippi, Saturday and Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition Saturday, tomorrow morning from 7 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. A resolution to provide Medicaid Children's Health Insurance Program coverage to as many as 2,000 low-income Marshallese migrant children lawfully residing in Arkansas was approved by the Arkansas Senate yesterday. Arkansas will be the 32nd state to opt in to the Immigrant Children's Health Improvement Act of 2009. That act allows Medicaid coverage for lawfully present migrant children and pregnant women. Republican State Senator Lance Eads told his Senate colleagues, it's only fair to provide our kids' health care coverage to Pacific Islanders, given their service to the U.S. military interests during the Cold War.
The largest population group outside of their islands is in Hawaii and in Arkansas. So we have a lot of them that are migrant people that have the ability to come to this part of the United States. And this is an opportunity for us to be able to provide some cost reduction off the state, I believe, because we're currently picking them up through community health centers, through trips to the emergency rooms and things like that. So this will actually be covered 100% by the feds. All we need to do is ask for the governor to ask for this change through Medicare and Medicaid, and I would appreciate a good vote.
You've heard the explanation. All in favor say aye. Any opposed, nay. Motion carried.
Senator Eads co-sponsored House Concurrent Resolution 1012 with Republican State Representative Jeff Williams, both legislators from Springdale. It passed in the Arkansas House on March 13th. Pacific Islanders from Palau, Micronesia, and the Marshall Islands are allowed, under a special treaty, to legally live and work in the United States. As many as 14,000 Pacific Islanders from the Republic of the Marshall Islands live in Arkansas. The resolution will now be transmitted to Governor Asa Hutchinson, who will have to agree to file an amendment to Arkansas's Medicaid plan. The transition of Fort Smith Southside's high school from the Rebels to the Mavericks culminated in an auction last weekend. Everything with Rebels or Dixie on it went to the highest bidder. That included all kinds of student uniforms, bags, and different types of signage. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Southside High School Principal Wayne Haver about the closing of this chapter in the school's history.
So how did the auction go? How much money did it bring in? And where is that money going now?
Well, the auction went very smoothly, very well. There was probably 250 to 300 people there. Of course, state law requires that a school district get as much close to fair market value for items that it can. And so whenever we have any other kind of auction of old equipment or vehicles or things, it's always done by auction. This actually brought in a total of only $22,200. By the time they paid the auctioneer his fee and then a couple of advertising bills that they had to pay, the district ended up with $19,123. That will go, I'm not sure where it will go, it will for sure go into just the general fund of the district. It may offset some of the cost of the changeover from Rebels to Maverick, cost of uniforms or signage or things like that. Main thing was that it would go to help offset the total cost of that changeover.
And speaking of that changeover, how is it going so far? Where are you guys with that?
Well, it's going very smoothly. In fact, you'd never know it was even happening at the school. There's some things out in the community occasionally that go on, but at school, you'd almost never know what's happening. Of course, this year, or last year, actually, in the 15-16 school year, we changed our fight song from Dixie to what really is a modification of the Wabash Cannonball. And we did that last year, and that went very, very smoothly also. We were still Rebels last year, even though our fight song changed. But this year, of course, we were the first year for Mavericks, and that was done so that all the changes could be made. The fight song could be done fairly quickly. The mascot didn't go into effect till the 16-17.
And where are you guys on uniforms and everything?
Well, everything's been purchased. We're now into the spring sports, so all those have been, they were the last things to be purchased. But football uniforms and had to be purchased in the summer to get ready for the fall and stuff. The spring sport, they were kind of paced out over the fall to be ready for the spring sport. And so things like soccer and softball, baseball, there were scoreboards to change, banners to change, all that kind of stuff to do. So that's all been done. And so we're now playing completely as the Southside Mavericks.
Is there anything else that's left to be done with that, or is it kind of already squared away?
I think it's already squared away. The auction kind of was the culmination of the changeover. That kind of brought closure to the whole process. So now there's not anything that's still left to be done. Many years ago, in 1989-90, they looked at this then and they took away the Confederate flag. They left Dixie and Rebels, but had it been done then, we wouldn't be going through this now. None of those kind of items that had Rebels or Dixie Bells and stuff are in the school anymore.
I did hear, speaking of the Dixie Bells, that there were some parents who were upset about the auctioning off of some bags.
One person bought all of them and they were given back to the girls.
Some parents were upset saying that the bags were part of the fees and they felt like they should have just gotten the bags. Can you tell me
that was one of the other
what
things,
happened?
Too. We were not sure whether they had been purchased. They weren't fees, but they weren't sure whether they'd been purchased by the district or whether they'd been purchased individually when the girls became a Dixie Belle, and they would keep them the 3 years and then they would just keep them after that because they had bought them. So that's why it was kind of worked out that one person would buy those. And by buying all those, the guy just auctioned off the entire table, and the whole table of bags went for $150. Okay. And so then those bags were given back to the kids. that was a kind of a compromise deal that we would purchase those back.
Okay.
Not the school district, but the person did, and then just gave them back to the kids.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
That was Southside High School Principal Wayne Haver. He says the district will reimburse the person who bid the $150 on the Dixie Belle bags to return them to students. He says the Dixie Belles are now the Southern Belles and have new bags to go along with the new name and that new mascot at Southside, the Mavericks. This is Ozarks at Large.
Thousands of listeners to KUAF give annual or monthly gifts online at supportkuaf.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. Yesterday morning, the Arkansas Supreme Court ruled Washington Regional Medical Center does in fact own the 4 acres where the Fayetteville City Hospital once operated before it closed. That decision, regarding litigation dating back more than 4 years, means a contract to sell the land to the Fayetteville Public Library is closer to becoming an actual sale. The land is where library officials want to expand. Yesterday afternoon, a few hours after the decision was handed down, David Johnson, the executive director of the Blair Library, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. He says the library had been patient throughout the litigation process.
Yet we did have a long arc timeline in mind. We had thought that we were going to give the court system until about April before we started having some conversations about whether we expand growing up on the existing footprint or do we wait going south. So it was, you know, we didn't really publicize that April timeline, but it was there.
There has been the sort of deal ready to go for some time.
Correct. We've had a signed contract with Washington Regional for $2 million on the property for about 4.5 years.
That's a long time.
And it is. And we've been very patient. The community has been abundantly patient in just letting the court system work itself out, let the case work its way through the various layers. We would all have loved to be walking into a brand new building already, but it's going to happen at the time that the community's ready for it.
So the Supreme Court decision comes along. You have the signed contract. Can you actually file the contract and give the money, or do you have to wait to see if there's an appeal to the Eighth Circuit?
There is about a 18-day waiting period where anyone can ask for a rehearing. So we have 18 days from now, at which time we think that we'll be able to move forward with executing the contract with Washington Regional.
You'd rather build south than up because that's less intrusive?
Yeah. You know, one of the concerns I've always had was that if we did have to develop on the existing footprint, it would be a disruption of services. You lose so much momentum in the community. And by doing it to the south, we can build the additional 80,000 square feet southward. Then we'll decant into that space while we remodel the Blair buildings. Remember, the 80,000 square feet is a $35 million project. Remodeling, and that's phase one. Remodeling Blair is phase two, and that's about a $15 million project for a total of 50.
Not to diminish the Supreme Court decision that was handed down on Thursday, but you're not done yet.
Yeah,
I mean, there's some money to be raised, right?
Yeah, so the community stepped up and said, we'll pay half for half. They agreed to the 1.2 mil bond issue. And so, yes, we've definitely got to step out and raise the remaining 24, 25 million. And, you know, we think our trust bucket is full. Our goal is to give this community the biggest return on their invested tax dollar. And, you know, we're going to have work hard for that money. We're not going to settle short.
Is it easier now to see that expansion than it was 24 or 48 hours ago?
No, I wasn't in total denial, but I will confess to I had a dream last night for the first time that the word came down, the Supreme Court affirmed it.
Wait a second. You had a dream the night before the decision?
I did. And the funny thing is for the past 2 weeks, I have, in fact, I was in a meeting in Charleston 2 weeks ago, and I wrote down on a piece of paper when I knew it wasn't going to happen that week. It was at 2:40 Eastern time. I just had a feeling it's not happening this week. And I made a note to myself. Last week, I just felt like it's not going to happen. Last night, for the first time, I had a dream. It was affirmed.
David Johnson is the executive director of the Fayetteville Public Library. Yesterday, the Arkansas Supreme Court released its decision that the 4 acres adjacent to the library are owned by Washington Regional Medical Center and can be sold to the library. a decision regarding litigation that is more than 4 years old. Our conversation was recorded yesterday, a few hours after the Supreme Court decision was announced. This is Ozarks at Large.
That's the Anderson Brothers performing Bud on Bach. Hi, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz. Every Friday night from 10 till midnight on 91.3 FM, I'll feature music that will be performed live in Northwest Arkansas in the next 2 months, including more from the Anderson Brothers, Orrin Etkin, Justin Coughlin, Edward Simon. Shades of Jazz, right here on KUAF.
It is Friday, March 17th, 2017, St. Patrick's Day. With me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Looking hopefully for green. Well, I don't think I have any on.
Sorry.
We'll negotiate later.
Yes.
So I'm kind of digging this theme of events you might not hear about unless you hear it here.
Oh, yeah.
So this is like the third week of this.
All right.
Rock and roll.
We got so many going on that some kind of get lost in the shuffle.
And so these are some of those.
Okay.
The first one is for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
It's called Women of Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens at 7:30 today at the Alma Performing Arts Center. I talked to Naomi Neal, who is one of the Singing Neal sisters.
Mm-hmm.
She's from County Kerry, Ireland. And she says she plays the role of the traditional middle child.
Which means?
She's the glue and the one that calms things down.
Okay.
They've been playing, or singing rather, together since they were kids, like 10 years old. They formed a group and won a talent show, and they won £1,500.
Okay.
Which was enough to get equipment so they could do gigs.
And they
here they are.
Back.
And the show bills itself as not just a traditional Irish dance show, because they do have the vocals, they do have the dance, and they also have a silk aerialist.
Oh, wow.
So fun. 7:30 today at the Alma Performing Arts Center. Tickets start at $25 at 632-2129. Tomorrow night is Main Street Music Night at the Arts Center of the Ozarks in Springdale.
Yes, it is.
Back for, they tell me it's the fourth year. I'm not sure that it's really been that long.
But they would know better than us.
Yeah,
I
guess they would. So, and the first show for this year is Cameron Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea, it takes place in the downstairs gallery, and the whole idea is that it's a house concert.
Right.
Small venue.
It's really
buy
cool.
Buy some wine. You're very close to the performer. You get to see whatever is on the walls at ACO. And it sounds like great fun. It happens at 7:30 Saturday at ACO, and tickets are $15 for adults.
Mm-hmm.
And then earlier in the day on Saturday, or sometime next week, which is spring break, do a little spring cleaning.
Okay.
But do it at the Hawkins House at the Rogers Historical Museum.
Do actually, somebody else's spring
think
cleaning?
Think about doing
okay.
it.
Okay.
They have an exhibit about spring cleaning. And this is great because spring cleaning was described as an abomination of desolation that breaks women's backs and causes men to break the Ten Commandments. I don't know if you remember your mom's spring cleaning. Mine did.
I don't I mean, it kind of happened, but we didn't call it that. You know, it's just as it got warmer.
Oh, we did. And you started just like they did in the old days. In the attic and work down.
Hmm.
You do the front hall and the kitchen last. You take all the rugs out and beat them.
Beat them, right.
You clean all the woodwork. You clean all the glass chimneys. You clean all the knickknacks, which at my house takes from one spring to the next. You wash all the curtains and rinse them and starch them. And yeah, it's a big job. But it's a lot more fun to go look at it than to actually do it. So the exhibit is open through May 20th, and hours are 10 to 5 Monday through Saturday at the Rogers Historical Museum, and it is free.
Okay.
And there's one more thing that All right. I don't know what to tell you about because I haven't seen it, but I know that it involves Erica Wilhite and the Artist Laboratory Theater, and it's called Bango.
Okay, I've read a little bit about this, and it sounds intriguing.
Well, you know their theater experiences are always interactive and unusual.
Right.
The premise of this one is that it's a write-your-own story, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So each bingo ball that might get pulled directs the story.
Exactly.
And this is something they're going to continue doing. They've got a date around the 1st of April at ACO, as a matter of fact. So if you want to go check it out, it's 8 o'clock today and tomorrow at their new building at 1030 South College Avenue in Fayetteville. It's $10 or $8 if you're a pedestrian or a bicyclist.
Oh, nice. Okay.
How about that? And I am told to say adult content.
Very good. Very good. Becca Martin Brown is a features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. This is Ozarks at Large. Jake Herzog plays guitar, all kinds of guitar. He has fronted a jazz rock trio that headlined the legendary Blue Note in New York City. He co-leads the rock band The Young Presidents, and he served as music director and lead guitarist for Nat and Alex Wolff's band and toured the country with that band. He also records solo projects. His most recent CD is titled Well-Lit Shadow. And last year, he moved to Northwest Arkansas and has joined the music faculty at the University of Arkansas. On March 30th, a Thursday, his new trio, including Chris Teal drums and Drew Packard bass, will play a free concert for the University of Arkansas Honors College in the Honors College Lounge. It's a free concert that's open to the public. I mentioned the concert is free, but RSVPs are suggested since the room is an intimate setting. Though the concert on the 30th will be with a trio, Jake came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio last night to play solo and to talk about his music. And when he set up in the Furman Garner Performance Studio last night, he had half a dozen pedals below him. I asked him to give me a tour of his tech.
Well, this is a pretty small set of pedals for me that just have to do with some of the solo music that I've been playing recently. But this, mostly in the delay category of life, has a little bit of delay. This is a bigger one. And this is some enhancement overtones. And then I just have the usual, the politeness pedal.
The politeness pedal. How long does it take you to get, how long did it take you to get comfortable with the pedals? Because it seems to a non-musician that that's a whole nother instrument or a whole nother sort of application.
That's absolutely the best way to describe it, and that's the way I describe it to my students as well. Everything you add to the sound changes the touch of the instrument and changes the timbre and changes the response, really. And so there's you actually have to physically play differently depending on what the sonic setup that you might be running from the electric guitar is. So I think that's a really interesting and fun challenge. And every time you get a new piece of gear, you kind of have to learn it a little bit, like you would learn how to ride a new bike or drive a new car or cook with a different spice. It's the same basic idea, but there's some variance in the technique.
Well, you say these are delays, so does that mean that you have to play differently because the music is slightly delayed from when your pick might hit the string to when it hits our ears?
Well, in a way, you still hear the original sound, but in effect, the guitarist's dilemma is often how to make a note longer. We are very jealous of violin players and saxophone players and anybody who can just go bah for a long time. And if I hit a note, even with a little vibrato, it kind of has a relatively short shelf life. So that's where the delays come in. It gives the note somewhere else to go. And if I add a longer one, then we have a really long note. And that's really great for something that's sustained. It makes that, we hear it for a lot longer. But the trade-off is, if you play something that's fast, it's not clean anymore. We lose the clarity of. So that's the, some guitarists in rock bands like U2 or Rage Against the Machine or Muse make great use of this because it makes the instrument sound bigger, like more than one.
Yeah, I'm thinking the Edge.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So Exactly, right. So how do you as an artist find that middle ground?
I think that for me personally, the philosophy I've carried toward this is really in the name of what it is. The effects are in effect, and they're not the music. And there are, I will certainly admit, there are musicians and styles out there where the effects may be the music, like, say, trance music, or even some music that falls maybe into the EDM or dance category. There are effects that really are fundamental to the music. But for me personally, using this in a classical or a jazz setting, it's sort of an enhancement of what the instrument is, rather than the music itself. But it has been interesting. You know, I've worked with composers that who, even if they're not guitar players, they're quite familiar with what the enhancement of the guitar can do. So they kind of write for that, which is fun.
Tell me a little bit about Well Lit Shadow.
Well, this project was several years sort of in the making, and I sort of stumbled upon two ideas at the same time. One was writing programmatic music that sort of was directly related to images or stories or something that you could verbalize versus music for music's sake. And I got into that, and I got into writing for solo guitar at that same time, and so it seemed natural for me to put those two things together. And to decide on the subject matter, I kind of reached back. You know, when I was young, my father is a scientist, and he worked on in his life with a lot of particle accelerators. I should say continues to work with a lot of particle accelerators in his life. And he used to have these pictures up in his office, and colleagues of his down the physics corridor at the University of Illinois would have similar images up on the walls and their doors. And I always kind of loved those, and I didn't really understand them, but I thought they were neat. And as I learned a little bit about them, they sort of really struck me as this deep modern art. I mean, it's Jackson Pollock-esque in its use of color and shapes and texture, but also there's a very quantifiable mathematical meaning to these images, and they represent data that's collected, and which has pretty profound implications in terms of what something is made of or how two things interact, or you know, these sort of Socratic questions about the universe that we've always been asking, and now we can sort of answer some of them with these giant machines. So that whole thing to me was still blows my hair back a little bit. And so I wanted to write some music about that. And I was thinking about how lonely that must be. It's lonely to be the only one in the world that knows something. It's lonely to be a particle inside of a machine. And just the whole concept of something so tiny that we can't even see it. Up until we can't even measure it until the last, you know, however many decades that we've been able to do this. And so that lent itself to maybe this should be solo guitar music. Maybe this is one instrument kind of situation.
You talk about particles, small things that can't be seen with the naked eye that when working together create something. It sounds a little like musical notes.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of similarities there in terms of, you know, the building blocks of a song, the building blocks of a chord. And then down to its very nature, you know, music is nothing but vibrations. And there's a very quantifiable, measurable science of vibrations and why we like the sound of this. And for several centuries, the sound of that was unpleasant to people. And you know, so, you know, the ancient Greeks knew all about this. They had their mathematical proportions to different things, and how we sort of transitioned from the pure mathematics to what we've been using, equal temperament, at least on this half of the world. is in and of itself a pretty interesting story. But there's such a deep connection between the math and science of music and the production of music, the art itself. I'll share with you one of the pieces off of Well-Lit Shadow, and this one is very literal. This is called What We Found, and it's meant to literally represent the particles that go around and around in a ring, slam into each other, and then what we measure is the fallout, shall we say.
The Honors College Concert, March 30th, 6 p.m. Have you been in that room yet?
Yes, just once.
Did you get to play in there? And
no, we have. I think we'll check levels like, an hour before the gig.
How long does it take you to go into an unfamiliar setting and figure out, or does it even matter, how the sounds work in that room?
Well, there's definitely rooms out in the universe that are more challenging than others to play because of, sometimes with electric music, if you're playing loud electric music in a room that was built, say, for a string quartet, you almost run into a problem of too much ambience in the room. And it can be difficult to discern a ding, 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 ding from one side of the stage to another. So we've definitely experienced that once or twice. But I think for the most part, playing in an acoustic room encourages the band to play like that. And playing a big hall where you can rely on amplification, your audio sources will be kind of different. So I think that there's always challenges in every place you play.
Do you mind playing one more?
Not at all.
What will this be?
What would you rather hear, a solo, solo guitar piece or a jazz standard?
Oh, see, now you've put the pressure on me, and half the listeners will be upset with whatever I say. And I, so now I'm going to cheat. I'm going to say I'd like to hear for our Friday show the solo jazz and then the jazz standard, if I can be so bold, for the Sunday morning show.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good. So I'll play you a tamer piece off of Well Lit Shadow. This is called Trace of You. And the inspiration of this one was thinking about what must it be like in these particle accelerators when they're turned off. They're just sitting there covering miles and miles underneath the ground. And sometimes they keep a little bit of energy going on in there, but there might not be any collisions happening. And so so in my mind, that just kind of makes me wonder about what sort of ethereal ghosts are going to be walking around in there.
Downtime at the Fermi Lab.
Exactly.
Jake Herzog is a member of the University of Arkansas Music Faculty, and he'll perform with his trio Thursday, March 30th at 6 p.m. in the Honors College Lounge in Gearhart Hall on the University of Arkansas campus. You can find out more about that concert by going to honorscollege.uark.edu. And you can find out more about Jake at jakeherzog.com. And Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on Weekend Ozarks at Large on KUAF, we'll hear another tune he performed during his visit last night in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Huntsville. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Patrick Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your St. Patrick's Day.